Hello everybody, this is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business, and I'm talking with Harpreet Kaur. She is the director of the Genpec Center for Women's Leadership at Ashoka University, which is in Sonipat, which is a town outside New Delhi in India. Harpreet recently hosted the consultation for Professor Surya Deva of the UN Working Group on Business and Human Rights about how to apply the gender lens to UN guiding principles. So we're going to talk about that as part of our series on gender, equality and non-discrimination. So Harpreet, thank you for joining us. Where do you think we are in terms of business understanding the idea of gender equality?
Thank you, Salil. Delighted to be speaking to you on this. And I think it's also sort of the right time to be talking about the consultation and how it went. You know, we were delighted to have people from over 30 countries, perspectives from various stakeholders, including businesses, including civil society, women's rights advocates, there was academia, civil society, and governments and NHRIs. You know, we've had business people talking in the room and talking about the smart economics here, which is basically saying that, you know, gender diversity and competitive financial performance go hand in hand. We've had various companies giving also examples of, you know, how it's really helped boost their growth and productivity. I think overall, if you look at it, in some ways, businesses, they do get that more women is good for their profits, more women is good for businesses, as well as good for their economies as well. The World Economic Forum, where gender world's leaders meet to discuss economies, they have been emphasizing on rising income and gender equality in the recent years. The SDGs incorporate gender equality as a strategic objective. And in fact, a lot of companies did talk about how they're focusing on the SDG 5, considering that it's so crucial to meeting all other SDGs. And you know, we have the G20 leaders who are formally committed to bringing an additional 100 million women within the workforce by 2025. I think businesses do get that in the room, there were voices that provided a business case for women's rights. But I think we still have a long way to go. There were a lot of other cases that were brought in to kind of establish how businesses continue to impact women in very, very different ways and often systematically.
Now, you and I were also took part in the Indian Responsible Business Forum last Friday in Delhi. Now, one of the things that came there was Mr. Arun Mehra, who has been an advisor to the planning ministry in India in the past. He made a very interesting point that businesses should do it because it's the right thing to do. They should not look for economic rationale. How do we move from the argument that business should do something because it is good for business to because it is the right thing to do?
Women continue to face discrimination because your gender lines are drawn very, very early. And how businesses impact women is again an outcome of these interlocked system of power, influence, your race, your religion, your gender. And it does not impact in isolation. And I think that's why you do not need sort of a business case for women's rights. But also, there has to be an understanding that businesses do not impact in isolation. Then you actually need just a campaign to change the gender norms in society. And because businesses form such an important part of society, that might just change situation.
So business has to be a critical component, but it can't do it alone. You had delegates from Southeast Asia, from East Asia and South Asia. That what kind of regional changes did you see? Did you see patterns that certain countries are doing better? In certain countries, companies are doing better?
You know, we kind of observed a continuous pattern of systemic abuses and violations on women. And in the region, if you look at it, you know, your intersectionality plays a huge role. Hmm. And how the gendered roles and the biases and stereotypes against women, a lot of this is deep-rooted in Asian societies. And, you know, your legal and cultural roles. You know, we've had not so much of differences in that sense. You know, we've had cases of women human rights defenders being targeted, not just in Southeast Asia or East Asia, but also South Asia. We've had issues about land rights, again, across the region. Again, you know, women in supply chains, the low sourcing countries across Asia, and how women face, you know, gender wage gap, absence of living wages, lack of social protection, how their discriminatory practices at workplaces, sexual harassment at workplace. These were some of the issues that sort of came up as a sort of a common set of violations or abuses on women's rights by businesses within the region.
I mean, you know, you used to be the researcher for South Asia for the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, and you have in the past looked at the garbage sector in India and in Bangladesh. I mean, in Bangladesh, that there was this book by Naila Kabir, the sociologist, called Power to Choose, which said that even though jobs in the garment sector may not be very well paid, the very fact that women are now going out of their homes and going to work is an empowering thing, and it's a good thing. And the argument being that no job is worse than no job. And at the same time, you have cases where once they go in such a setting, they're more liable to be exploited or, you know, harassed and sometimes sexually abused. I mean, this is a tough thing for a company to handle, which is abroad, you know, it is in Holland or Britain or something like that. And what would you advise companies which want to play by international standards in difficult countries? What kind of alliances should they forge? Should they be with local trade unions? Should they be with local companies, local NGOs? What should they do?
Various things I think that companies can do. One essentially is to, they need to make their value chains very, very transparent and ensure rigorous gender impact assessments to identify the gender dynamics at various levels, you know, whether it's at recruitment, supervision, remuneration, or the complaint processes or the remedial mechanisms. The second thing that needs to be done is working closely with the NGOs and the civil society organizations. You know, I previously said how businesses do not impact in isolations. You know, and I'll quote you an example. I was visiting a factory in Delhi, Noida, and there was this woman worker, you know, in one of the very, very low paid jobs. And, you know, she was talking about various incidents that she's not been very comfortable with at workplace. And she talked about how her supervisors pat on her back and say, oh, you know, you've not done something right. And you know, she said, I think that's still better because when I get back home, my husband beats me up really badly for things that I have even done right. And here is the supervisors who's just hitting me for something that I've not done right, and that's also he's doing, you know, politely. You know, look at the level of vulnerability and look at the level of being unaware about how she's being harassed, and her comparison is within her family structure and her social structure, where businesses in some ways cannot reach, but your civil societies can have a huge role, you know, how they can help these women make more aware about their rights, both at workplaces as well as their houses or their communities, because you need to give them a voice, not just at workplace, but also to be able to raise their demands at societal or a community level too.
Thanks very much, Harpreet. This is very helpful, and all the best with your work at the Center for Women's Leadership.